All right. It's 9:30 on June 3rd, 2026. I will call the this meeting of the Air Pollution Control District Hearing Board to order. I will ask Lori to please call the roll.
Dr. Colome? Mr. Cook?
Here.
Mr. Cox?
Here.
Mr. Saperstein? And Chair Dressler?
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right. The first item of business is approval of the minutes for January 7th, 2026 meeting. Even if you weren't here, you're allowed to vote on the minutes. I would ask if there's any discussion about the minutes. Hearing none, do I have a motion for the approval of the January 7th minutes?
So moved.
Yes, second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously. Next item is announcements and staff reports. Are there any announcements or staff reports?
Good morning, Chair Dressler, members of the hearing board. The staff does not have any announcements.
All right.
Your mic wasn't on, but it's okay.
Do I need to say it again?
Just so that we have the recording.
Good morning, Chair Dressler, members of the hearing board. There are no staff updates or announcements.
Thank you. Next item is public comment. I'm going to open up. This is a time for any member of the public who would like to comment on anything under the purview of this hearing board, but which is not on today's agenda. I'm opening up public comment right now.
Chair Dressler, we did not receive any public comment, and we did not receive any speaker slips today.
Thank you. I'll close public comment. The next item is our hearing today. Lori, would you please read the item into the record?
Item E1, case number 2025-09-M1, modification of variance and final compliance date. To consider a modification of regular variance from District Rules 328C2, C4, G, H, and I1, and Rule 206 ATC 14500, Mod 10, conditions listed under item E1 on the published agenda. The variance petition was submitted on May 4th, 2026 for relief from the following requirements at the Tahigas landfill. Best available control technology emission limits for anaerobic digestion facility and material recovery facility combined with heat and power internal combustion engines. Operational parameters, continuous emission monitoring system, requirements and data telemetry for the ADF and MRF CHP IC engines and SEMS excursions until compliance can be achieved.
Thank you. Now I will administer the oath to any witnesses, including district staff, that will be providing testimony today. After taking the oath, you will I'll ask you to state your name and affiliation with the case and ask you to affirm the oath. So would you please stand if you're going to be testifying today? Raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear or affirm under penalty of perjury in accordance with the laws of California that your testimony in this proceeding will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? And could you take a turn and state your names?
I am Travis Spear with the County of Santa Barbara Public Works Department.
Lindsay Coakley with the Public Works Department. Amy Long with the district, and I do. Caitlin and County with the district, I do.
Thank you very much. All the witnesses have been sworn in. Are there any other witnesses, Lori?
No additional witnesses for this
case. All right. At this time, I'll ask the petitioner from Santa Barbara County Public Works to make their case. During the course of your presentation, please sort of focus it so that we can make the six findings that we're going to need to make. Thank you.
There you go.
All right.
Good morning, Chair Dressler and members of the board. My name is Travis Spear. I'm joined here with Lindsay Coakley. We are employed with the County of Santa Barbara Public Works Department, Resource Recovery and Waste Management Division. And today we'll be presenting on our regular variance petition. In this presentation, we'll go over our facility overview, the six findings required by the petition, our current status on our current variance, and steps we are taking to comply under this proposed variance. I would like to note that I am blind, so at times I will be pausing to refer to my notes auditorily. I'll now pass it over to Lindsay for her portion of the presentation.
Good morning. The Resource Center is co-located at the Tahigas Landfill, which is approximately 26 miles west of the city of Santa Barbara. The Resource Center consists of three separate facilities, including the Material Recovery Facility, or MRF, the Anaerobic Digestion Facility, or ADF, and the Compost Management Unit, or CMU. The Tahigas Landfill and Resource Center serve the cities of Santa Barbara, Goleta, Solvang, and Buellton, in addition to the unincorporated communities on the South Coast, including San Ynez and the Coyama Valleys. The Resource Center is crucial to Santa Barbara County's Energy and Climate Action Plan as one of the largest reducers of greenhouse gas emissions, and is also included in our partner cities' climate action plans. The county and cities depend on the Resource Center to comply with Senate Bill 1383, which requires a 75% reduction in the burial of organic waste at landfills as compared to the baseline set in 2014. At the Resource Center, waste and recyclables are first received at the MRF tipping area. The material is sorted into organics, recyclables, and residue in a part of the building called the materials sorting area. Recyclables collected from the municipal solid waste are sold to market while the waste residue is landfilled. The sorted organics are then sent to the ADF, or the anaerobic digestion facility. Emissions from the MRF are controlled by two baghouses that vent to stacks located outside the building, and there's also an existing landfill gas treatment system, which feeds into two combined heat and power engines, which are equipped with continuous emissions monitoring systems. These engines provide electricity for the on-site needs, as well as exporting to the SCE grid. At the ADF, organic material is placed into one of 16 fermenters located inside of the building. These fermenters are then closed for 28 days to produce digestate. During this time, the organics are heated inside of the digesters and sprayed with percolate to metabolize the organic waste and then produce a methane-rich biogas. The biogas is sent to a hydrogen sulfide treatment system prior to being combusted in the two additional CHP engines to produce a guaranteed amount of electricity pursuant to our power purchase agreement with SCE. There's also a biofilter which controls fugitive emissions from the ADF. Combustion equipment at the ADF is similar to the MRF, as there are two engines and a flare which burn biogas and landfill gas. SEMS is also equipped at these ADF engines as well. We're actively working to pass formal acceptance testing at the ADF, which will mark full completion of the Resource Center development. After processing in the ADF is complete, digestate is transported to the CMU and mixed with dry screened compost, which is processed by a covered aerated static pile system, what we call the GOR system. The GOR system consists of 20 mixed piles covered with GOR blankets, which are aerated for approximately another 28 days. And this system has significantly reduced odors from the composting process since it was first installed in 2024. Now that you've been introduced to the operation, I'll go on to describe the six findings that this hearing board must make in order to grant this variance. Finding number one, the petitioner for the variance is or will be in violation of Health and Safety Code 41701 or any rule, regulation, or order of the district. The county is currently in violation of permit conditions under ATC 1450-10, as well as Rule 328 for continuous emissions monitoring. These violations are due to a combination of factors, including inaccurate permit assumptions that were made during the permitting process, outdated engine control systems that cannot be modified without upgrades, and extensive review and correspondence with manufacturers and third-party consultants. Finding number two. Conditions causing the violation were beyond the reasonable control of the petitioner, and requiring compliance would result in either an arbitrary or unreasonable taking of property or the practical closing and elimination of a lawful business. The Resource Center meets the definition of essential public service under the Health and Safety Code, and immediate compliance would impose an unreasonable burden as it plays a critical role in diverting organic waste, reducing landfill use, and generating renewable energy. The fact of the matter is that the county's current permit does not reflect actual operating scenarios to keep this facility running. Compliance isn't feasible without a full permit revision, which must go through air modeling and CEQA review. We've already initiated that process, but these requirements are outside of our immediate control because not all corrective actions were fully realized until the facility had undergone a thorough root cause analysis of the issues that had drove noncompliance in the first place. The root cause investigation at the Resource Center and its associated corrective action was not fully understood until March of this past year. It was at this point we decided to meet with the district staff to discuss a variance extension. What we discovered in our root cause investigation was that assumptions were made in the early days of permitting, nearly 10 years ago, that digestate would have similar emissions to composting facilities that process green waste or food waste. Because our ADF processes the organic fraction of municipal solid waste, which is what you put in your black bin or your brown bin, like your deodorant stick, the source material is not representative of a green waste or food waste composting facility. And at the time of permitting, digestate from separated organics did not have textbook emission factors, which required some assumptions to be made to allow the facility to be constructed. These assumptions turned out to be imprecise, which is why the permit must be amended. Fast forward last year, the county discovered that a specific contaminant was being produced in the biogas called siloxanes. This comes from cosmetics and personal care products. This is an important detail that Travis will discuss later on in this presentation. We also determined that fluctuating engine load, changes that were happening outside of normal operating hours, were causing NOx spikes. This required operators to respond in real time to reduce emissions through the SCR system. Because the county does not have the staff available 24/7 to manually track emissions and respond, upgrades to these engine controls must be made to allow for automation. We are calling this the XT4 upgrade. In May of this year, the XT4 upgrade was completed on the ADF engines after we ordered parts in June of last year. So due to delays outside of our immediate control, such as contractor availability, missing components, and engine failures that happened in August, these upgrades were delayed. We are currently on track to install the XT4 upgrades at the MRF engines in August of this year. Last year, our staff did submit an application to amend the permit to address inaccurate assumptions. Due to the complexity of our air permit operational limits, changes to on-road MFAC emissions by CARB in 2025, and the need for outdated and foreign documentation to make new assumptions, permitting has been delayed. Our consultant, AECOM, set out to update the Resource Center emissions in June of 2025. Due to the extensive changes based on site-specific information that we gathered on operational scenarios, It took until February of this year to receive draft calculations that could be submitted to the district for review. Up on the screen is an example of a table from our permit for the MRF combustion equipment. So across four engines and two flares, there are 14 operational scenarios with separate hourly, quarterly, and annual emission limits. Finding number three, the closing or taking would be without a corresponding benefit in reducing air contaminants. Forcing an immediate shutdown would result in unintended environmental consequences. Organic waste would have to be landfilled or exported, which increases truck traffic and greenhouse gas emissions. There would also be a risk of increased methane emissions with more organics being landfilled. These outcomes are not only environmentally counterproductive, they're also inconsistent with Senate Bill 1383 goals. The requested variance allows us to continue destroying methane more efficiently than landfilling. Producing green energy with the use of local resources allows our division to continue providing an essential public service while also contributing to a cleaner environment. Finding number four. The applicant has given consideration to curtailing operations of the source in lieu of obtaining a variance. We've looked carefully at curtailment options, including whether we could temporarily suspend operations or reduce throughput, but the impacts are significant, over $13 million to haul waste out of the county, plus the greenhouse gas impact of long-haul transport. Reducing engine use means we can't supply the heat needed to keep the digesters functioning, so in short, curtailment would compromise core functions of the facility, which would require full facility shutdown to avoid creation of more issues. Shutting down the resource center would cause multiple downstream effects, including violation of Senate Bill 1383 requirements, breach of our SCE power purchase agreement, and additional violations of our air permit, as landfill gas and biogas generated would need to be flared 24/7. Finding number five. During the period the variance is in effect, the applicant will reduce excess emissions to the maximum extent feasible. The county is actively working to minimize excess emissions during the variance period. We've changed our staff's standard operations to immediately comply with the current air permit modeling assumptions. We are monitoring biogas quality in real time and changing carbon media at a great expense to prevent any exceedances of SOX due to spikes in hydrogen sulfide. We've increased the screened compost ratio at the CMU, which actually showed promising results during our last source test, where three out of the four piles tested passed our limit for ROCs. It's important to note that while the ADF flare usage has increased due to operational constraints, excess hours does not equate to excess emissions. The ADF flare has consistently passed source testing and has shown substantially less emissions than was previously assumed. Through the last variance, the ADF flare operated more than three times its permitted hour limit. When applying source-tested emission factors, quarterly permit limits were not exceeded. Despite the fact that there were hourly and daily excess emissions, we are making continuous improvements, including upstream feedstock quality to reduce contaminants like siloxanes, which stabilizes biogas production and then supports a consistent engine operation to reduce flare usage to the maximum extent feasible. Finding number six. During the period the variance is in effect, the applicant will monitor or otherwise quantify emission levels from the source, if requested to do so by the district, and report these emission levels to the district pursuant to a schedule established by the district. We're fully committed to tracking and reporting emissions throughout the variance period and have consistently provided monthly variance reports. We're collecting flare fuel usage data and SEMS output on the engines daily. We plan to implement a more comprehensive internal monitoring program that will help us accurately measure emissions of ammonia and ROC coming off of the compost piles through the GOR cover system. Our hope is to develop a program that's similar to that of the South Bay Odor Attribution Study, which was developed by the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. To provide an accurate, there are two separate goals that will be achieved with this. One, to provide an accurate representation of the ammonia and ROC levels coming off the piles at the CMU, and also to benefit the local receptors that may experience impacts due to odor. By characterizing the air quality at different areas of the Tahiga site, we believe we can better respond to our community to ensure transparency throughout this variance period. Lastly, we do understand the district will require increments of progress to be maintained through this variance, to which we are committed to achieving compliance in May of 2027. I will now pass this presentation off to Travis Speer, our compliance and engineering manager, to further describe the current status and progress made to date.
Thank you. Thank you, Lindsay. I'd like to start by going over the progress we've made currently under variance. First, I'd like to say that we conducted a robust biogas evaluation to get at the root cause of our ADF engine emission control issues. We collected numerous biogas samples and sent them off to laboratories to address this issue. We also resolved a major hardware failure on our ADF engines that caused these to go down, getting them back up by October of 2025. In 2025, we also partnered with our consultants AECOM to redo our stationary emissions modeling for the facility to incorporate the emissions from our recently approved capacity increase project that has just finished construction and is finalizing commissioning and permitting so we can begin placing waste in this fall. We also resolved multiple historic compliance items, including condensate throughput totalizers, MRF throughput limits, biofilters level set points, and decommissioning of our wood chipper. Next slide, please. I want to drill into the issue with the siloxanes and the biogas. When we took our numerous lab samples of the biogas, we realized that we did have siloxanes in our biogas with levels as high as 12,900 parts per billion by volume. We also researched that in our industry over recent years, it has been determined the siloxanes are found in biogas from ADFs when the ADFs use organics derived from MSW. As Lindsay mentioned, items like detergents, shampoos, cosmetics, and deodorants leave trace amounts of these materials in the organic portion of the material coming into the ADF. When combusted, these siloxanes create a glass-like dust film that coats our engine's internal components, leading to increased maintenance costs, but also coat the bricks that are essential part of the selective catalytic reduction system, part of the emission controls of the ADF engines, causing significant issues with these emission control devices. We first looked at a solution that would involve using our existing H2S treatment system at the ADF to see if it could be modified to treat for siloxanes as well. We determined that this system is undersized to treat for siloxanes in H2S and lacks the humidity controls. Next slide. We then asked Tetra Tech to look at other engineering solutions. The first solution we looked at, option one, was to install an additional fixed bed media treatment system for siloxane, similar to the one shown on this picture. This picture is the actual fixed bed media H2S treatment system located at the ADF. This additional fixed bed media treatment system for siloxanes would look similar to this. It would have humidity controls. The capital cost to install this would be approximately $3.2 million, with an annual operating cost of approximately $700,000 for media replacement. Also, the lead time to acquire the design and acquire these treatment system would be approximately 6 months once the contract was awarded. And I'd also like to note that this system would take up a large footprint. At the ADF, we are already space constrained, so this solution would include a robust engineering solution to site these vessels. The cost, space constraints, lead time cause this to be an undesirable option for us. Second. We'll now look at the second option we looked at. The second option looked at by Tetra Tech was to install a regenerative siloxane reduction system, similar to the one shown here. This is a Walexa device that is at our MRF to treat our landfill gas for siloxanes. The capital cost for this would be approximately $5.8 million, with an annual operating cost of approximately $200,000. While this would take up a smaller footprint, it is still substantial, and it would also necessitate an engineering solution to site this facility at the ADF. It would also have a long lead time, and I'd also like to note that this regenerative system requires thermal oxidation. At the MRF, we utilize the MRF flare, or landfill gas flare, for thermal oxidation of our existing siloxane reduction system, or regenerative system. But at the ADF, we are not able to use the ADF 24/7 as we can with the MRF flare. This would require us to site an additional component called a thermal oxidizer. The thermal oxidizer, we need about half of our biogas to reach temperatures necessary for thermal oxidation, which was required of the regenerative system. For all these reasons, capital costs, space constraints, the lead time, as well as the thermal oxidizer and biogas, this is also an undesirable solution. Next slide. The third option I want to discuss is our preferred option. This option leverages our existing landfill gas H2S treatment system and regenerative and siloxane reduction system. This would involve constructing a dual pipeline across our landfill. The figure shown here is an actual 50% conceptual design drawing from Tetra Tech for this solution. The red line shows where this dual pipe will be ran across our landfill. These pipes will be approximately 8-inch HDPE pipes. The first pipe will be the supply pipe, which will take raw biogas from our ADF and transport it to the west side of our landfill to mix with landfill gas prior to the existing H2S treatment system. This mixed gas will then go to the siloxane reduction system. Once it is treated, the treated mixed gas will then be split, with a portion of that treated mixed gas coming back up to the ADF for combustion in the ADF engines for PPA compliance, with the remaining going into the existing MRF engines and flares. Tetra Tech evaluated our existing H2S system and siloxane reduction system and concluded that these systems have the capacity to handle the extra biogas and its constituents. This approach offers the shortest lead time, a favorable cost-benefit analysis, and has been proven to be effective. Next slide. Our project team has put together a robust project schedule. On this slide, I'll go over the milestones. We have already commissioned Tetra Tech to work on the 50% conceptual plans, which we will actually be receiving this week for comments and review. We plan to have the 100% design drawings for the pipe work done by the end of July and go out to bid. Once the bid process is complete, we plan to put a board package together to go to the County Board of Supervisors and have identified November 10th, 2026 as the Board of Supervisor date. Construction is currently scheduled for December-January of 2027, at which time the project will be commissioned and we could replace the fouled SCR bricks, getting the system back into compliance. Please note that in order to construct the dual pipes and commission the system, we will need to receive an authority to construct from the APCD no later than November or December of 2026. I'd like to conclude this presentation by thanking the APCD staff for their professional assistance as we work through these compliance issues and come into full compliance with this proposed petition variance. Thank you very much. We'd like to open it up to questions.
Do I have any questions from board members? Lee?
Yeah, just a couple quick questions. You showed the one slide early on that showed the flares being used 3,000 plus hours compared to the, 1,500 or so? Yeah. No, not that one. And it had additional numbers on that one. Okay. So let me just ask, the flares are being used three times the amount, roughly, than they normally would be permitted for. But your emissions are below your permit level?
That's correct, on a quarterly basis.
Okay. So I guess I guess it's just one of those philosophical questions. You know, we permit how often a flare can be run, but really what we care about is the emissions, right? So why do we permit flare time when emissions is the important thing?
I suggest that that's a question for district staff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm just...
Reasonable worst case emission factor. Oops, do I need to restart? Okay. We have a reasonable worst case emission factor, and I believe the calculations shown on this screen were based on the source test emission factor, which is a moment in time and not necessarily the reasonable worst case. So although it was performing at that level at that source test, you know, if you looked at it in another time, like maybe during startup or another time, it might be a higher emission factor. So this is not necessarily accurate for the full amount of time that the flare is operating during that quarter, but could be definitely, you know, representative if you looked at it at one point. The other thing that we do is we do not have the ability to look at the emissions every minute, so we use the hourly limit with the reasonable worst case emission factor to determine the emissions that we permit them at. So that hourly limit is how we determine compliance with their emission limit. So that's kind of how we design permits and conditions and how we compare things.
Okay. I mean, it just seems interesting. I mean, I understand the math for sampling and everything like that, but the focus is on the actual emission versus how often it's burned, essentially, how often the flare is going, right?
Yes.
Just always trying to learn. Okay. The other thing I had was fantastic presentations, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is when you highlight the fact that it's going to cost millions of dollars to ship it off type of thing, it might also be worthwhile to discuss how much revenue reduction we have by not being able to sell the energy by being in violation. That's also an additional cost to the county. Because we can't have that income, and therefore the county has to make up that difference somewhere.
Yeah, thank you for that. Our revenue for the PPA for the biogas and electric production is approximately $1 million a year.
Okay.
Just for reference.
Okay. And then the final thing for option three, and good work trying to find the best option out there, is there funding, the $750,000 or so additional funding in the budget already? Or are we hoping that we're going to get it?
No, there is funding. RRWMD is an enterprise fund, so our revenue comes from the ratepayers, mainly Marburg with a franchise agreement, and our reserves do have funds to be able to construct the pipeline projects, which is estimated at approximately $750,000. I don't think I put that in there, but you nailed it. Maybe that was in there, but the capital cost engineering estimate at this time is approximately $700,000 for those pipes to go across the landfill.
Okay, great. Yeah, you had it in the papers.
Oh, okay.
In the documentation.
I forgot it was on the slide. Thank you.
Okay. All right. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
More questions?
Yeah, so I think last year the county also came for a variance. And so, I mean, I guess I just don't understand kind of the differences in discovery of the plant's operation at this point versus then, and kind of, I guess, in some ways, why you guys are coming back.
Yeah, thank you. So what happened last year was we had taken over operation of the ADF and CMU and all of the combustion sources at that time, I think in 2024. And in that, during the 2024 calendar year, we had basically replaced every single component on the engines, including the SCR systems, and then source tested in March of 2025. And we passed source test on all four engines at that point. Immediately after source testing, the SCR bricks failed again. And that's when we proceeded to say, okay, we have variance coverage, let's figure this out so that we don't mess this up again. And here we are today after we've done that full investigation, tested the biogas, et cetera.
Gotcha. So the basically siloxane poisoning is kind of what was discovered. You took over, did all the maintenance to reset the plant, and then after running for a period of time, you know, basically now all those bricks are saturated again, poisoned, and that's like the new root cause you guys are addressing.
Correct. That's okay. What's changed.
Are there ways to, so I think we talked about like the maintenance being troublesome, so I'm just curious, like that as an alternative, I mean, is there like what the cost benefit analysis for like new SCR bricks, or if there's some type of reclaim process, or you know, anything like that that you've discussed with consultants or the manufacturers?
Yeah, so the we have talked about replacing the SCR bricks, but if we do that, they will immediately foul. Like, we're talking about weeks, and these bricks have a 6 to 8 month long lead time, in addition to pretty substantial costs. I think it's like $100,000.
I believe it's $50,000. Okay. Per engine.
So per engine. Mm-hmm. It would be two at the ADF where the SCRs are failing. The automation and the upgrades on the MRF engines is what will solve that problem. Those bricks are actually working fairly fine. It's just the automation and the fluctuations in load that's causing issues at the MRF.
Just to elaborate a little bit, the siloxane reduction system on the MRF side that handles the landfill gas, it's allowed the SCR system on that side to work great. Those bricks don't foul.
Sorry, what system was that you said on the MRF or MDF-1?
The MRF.
Yeah.
Yeah, down at the MRF, those engines process landfill gas only. Hmm. They do not take biogas, and so those SCR, the emission control systems on those engines, do not foul due to biogas because they're not taking that fuel.
Okay. So then, I mean, I guess is there concern that they will start fouling when you're introducing a new feedstock with the pipeline?
We've thoroughly evaluated our existing Walexa siloxane reduction system. And it's robust enough to handle the biogas and landfill gas to treat for siloxanes. Okay. So we're confident that the mixed gas that comes out of there will not foul the bricks in any of our systems.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My only question is the discovery of siloxane in significant levels in the effluent stream something new that has been relatively new that has been discovered by you guys and maybe other landfills, or has it been known all along since the beginning of the design of this system?
Can I get this one?
Yep.
That's a great question. So when the Resource Center was first being conceptualized and designed, it goes back to 2011, with a lot of the design happening around 2015. At that time, it was not known. At that time, a lot of the modeling for emissions was done off of digesters that mainly process separated food waste and green waste, which don't carry those constituents through. We actually found a paper, which we can provide, that was written by SCS engineers, where they did a robust evaluation. They kind of started right along that same time, 2010, 2015, but then made revisions to the white paper. And that's where they did actual testing out in the field and laboratories to conclude that those siloxanes were present in organics derived from MSW. So unfortunately, the timing was, that was all being realized around the same time the design and emissions modeling was happening. And just the developer at that time did not account for that. And so now it is known widely in the industry. And I would say if this same facility was be designed now today, that they would have incorporated a siloxane reduction system in the biogas stream.
Thank you. Any further questions? If not, I'd like to ask the district to tell us whether or not you support this variance.
The district does support the variance request. We believe that they have met the six findings.
And do you believe that the providing this variance has a chance of creating a public nuisance?
No, I do not believe that granting this variance will create a public nuisance. During the last variance coverage, the last year that, since they came in, we have not received any odor complaints regarding the facility.
All right. Thank you very much. Any other questions for district staff from board members? All right, I will then bring this back to the board for discussion. I guess what, well, if you have any initial feelings and then if we feel like that we can make the findings and that we should grant this variance, we can go over the findings in more detail just to make sure that we have on the record that we found them.
No, I think the county and the team's done a good job of looking at all the options that are out there. You know, the challenge is this is a unique facility, and we seem to continue to evolve over all the long time because we've had a lot of different variances that have come out of the facility over the years. But we need to move forward, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to make design changes when you've already built the plant. So I think that's what the county's been dealing with. And so that was kind of one of my main questions on the, you know, kind of were things within their reasonable control as one of the findings. But it sounds like, you know, they basically had new learnings as they've been operating the plant and especially as they've taken it back over even since the last variance. So, you know, that was the finding I had the biggest question on, but that was answered.
I feel the same way. I feel like the siloxane issue is the kind of key thing here, is that it didn't get cooked into the original design, and it's an obviously major factor. Even though probably that the actual emissions of siloxane are small, whenever you have a contaminant like that, it can mess with the whole process. And so then you're kind of back to the drawing board, and you've already built your plant. And so I think that variances were actually designed for situations like this, and that's one of the contributing factors that make this beyond the control of the applicant. So why don't we go over the I'll just take a crack at making sure that we have made all the findings. And then if either one of you would like to add to that, you can let me know. On the first finding, I think it's very clear that we heard testimony that they are or will be in violation of district rules in their permit condition. We've also heard plenty of testimony regarding that the violation was beyond their reasonable control. And that with regard to requiring compliance, instant compliance would cause an unreasonable taking of property and closing of a business. The fact that this is an essential public service, that there are other laws involved, state laws involved, that require them continue to operate. And I think that that establishes that this was beyond their reasonable control, and that if we required them to be in compliance, that they couldn't operate the landfill. Closing would be without a corresponding benefit in reducing pollution. That evidence was presented under oath that it would actually cause a huge emission increase if they had to ship all of this stuff out. They've considered curtailing operations. There was plenty of testimony about all of the steps they did in determining how they could curtail, and they have done some curtailment of their emissions in this process. And during the period of the variance, in fact, excess emissions will be reduced to the maximum extent feasible. They've already established practices to do that. We heard that testimony. During the period of the variances, in effect, the excess emissions can be quantified or monitoring. They are doing monitoring reporting currently and will continue to do so during the variance, and we heard that testimony. Also, I heard from the district staff that it is unlikely that the issuance of the variance will cause a public nuisance. Does anybody have anything to add to that?
No, I agree.
Right. Do I have a
Chair
motion?
We have to open this item up for
I'm
public
sorry.
Comment.
Thank you, Lori. That's why it's so important for you to be here. I'm going to open this up for public comment.
Chair Dresslers, members of the hearing board, we did not receive any public comment on this item, nor did we receive any speaker slips today.
Then I'll close public comment. Now, I will entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to grant the variance.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Lori, would you please call the roll?
We don't have to call roll call since everybody's
here. You don't?
Here.
Okay. Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously.
Thank you.
All right. So the next item is approval of the administrative agenda. Does any hearing board member wish to pull any of these items? Go ahead.
I don't wish to pull any.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to...
Wait a minute. Let me open public comment on the administrative agenda.
Thank you, Chair Dresler. We received no public comment on the administrative agenda.
I'll close public comment. Now I'll take a message.
Now I'll make a motion to adopt the administrative...
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Passes unanimously. Thank you. This meeting is adjourned till August 5th, 2026. So there's no July meeting.
We receive no petitions requiring a July
All right.
hearing board meeting.
At 9:30 a.m. Thank you all very much. Thank you, guys. It was a great report.
Thank you very much.